Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You're listening to the Todd and Tyler Radio Empire.
Got a follow-up to his book, the Five People You Meet in Heaven. And the follow-up is the next person you meet in heaven.
In fact,
it's like talking to this guy.
The next person you meet in heaven, the sequel to the Five People You Will Meet in Heaven. Mitch Albom joining us. Welcome back.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Mitch, big fans, of course. Talked a couple times with you, at least more times than that over the years. I want to ask you this. Does Mitch Albom ever have an evil thought?
Oh, yeah. Too many.
Okay, good.
I try to squash them before they become an evil reality.
Will there ever be an evil book coming out from Mitch Albom?
That, probably not.
Okay.
Because there's enough of those out there, and I don't want to be remembered for that.
And you're not. You obviously write books that make you feel good, and you're an excellent writer, obviously, and congratulations again on the new one.
But I'm curious now, what was the most recent evil thought that you had?
Most recent evil thought? Probably when I was stuck in traffic yesterday. But I wanted to do to the guy in front of me.
Okay, all right. You got him then. You got him. All right. You can't be that. You can't have any. You have to have some evil thoughts when you're a sports guy, too, for that matter. I explained the second book here. I mean, I should say the sequel. It's not just your second book.
Yeah, so The Five People You Meet in Heaven was my first novel. Mm-hmm. I've never written a sequel. I'm not really a sequel writer. I wasn't fortunate enough to invent a Harry Potter or a Jack Reacher that I could, you know, go back to book after book. Most of my books just begin and end.
Mm-hmm.
But The Five People You Meet in Heaven was about an old man named Eddie, who was based on an uncle of mine, and he dies at an amusement park accident, saving a little girl from a falling cart. He's the mechanic there, and he sees her, and he pushes her out of the way at the last second from this thing that's falling, and he's killed instead. And he goes to heaven thinking he's a nobody and a nothing, and he meets these five people from his life, some of whom he knew and some of whom were almost strangers to him. And they explain how one moment in his life and their life changed the two of them forever. And by the time he's done, he finds out that this meaningless life he thought he led was actually very significant. And ever since I wrote that book, which became popular, very popular around the world, people have been writing me and asking me, so what's the next stage of heaven? That can't be it. You know, what happened to Eddie next? And what happened to the little girl? And I always said, well, I don't know, whatever your imagination tells you. But after 15 years and a lot of losses in the last couple of years of my own personal life, my mind was kind of on heaven anyhow. And so I said, well, let's go look at this. So this book is about what happened to Annie, the little girl who he saved, as a result of being saved, and how she went through life feeling that everything she made was a mistake because she made this terrible mistake when she was 8 years old. And when she dies, she goes to heaven and meets five people who point out, no, there actually are no such things as mistakes. And one of those people is Eddie, and she is reunited with him, and thus the title, The Next Person You Meet in Heaven, because for Eddie, that was the next person he met. You meet five, and then you wait online to meet the person that you affected the most.
Oh, see, but I want to point out to some people that it doesn't always work that way. Some of you are just leading meaningless lives. I don't want them to get their hopes up.
Well, that's why you read Mitch's book, to feel better about yourself, right?
That's my evil thought for you, Mitch.
Yeah, I said, we already had our evil thought for this minute, right?
Since you're such a great, you like this, and obviously you're a musician too, what made you even want to start writing sports when you, did you ever want to just be a novelist from day one in college?
Oh, no, it was actually the opposite way around.
Okay.
I was a musician, yes, that would have been my first choice.
Got it.
But that didn't work out.
That's tough, too. Musician's tough.
So I got into journalism, and I ended up in sports writing. And I was really content. I would have just stayed in sports writing and done nothing but that probably for the rest of my life, if not for this one night when I was 37 years old that I happened to flip the remote control, and I saw Maury Schwartz, who was my college professor for 4 years at Brandeis, talking to Ted Koppel about what it was like to die from Lou Gehrig's disease.
Right.
And, you know, that led me back to him and visited him, and I ended up spending all the last months of his life every Tuesday with him. I wrote a book to pay his medical bills. I was not trying to write a book about the meaning of life. I wrote a book to pay his medical bills.
I didn't know that part. I know the Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
That was supposed to be a tiny...
Most publishers told me no, they weren't interested in that. They said, it's boring.
Really?
You're a sports writer. Nobody wants to read that.
Yeah.
And we took the money and paid his medical bills, and I was all set to go back to sports writing. And then Tuesdays with Maury became this incredible thing, and my life changed because every person who started talking to me now wasn't talking about sports. They were talking about this person who had died, or this person who they loved, or they had lost, or this person who was sick. And you have that happen, you know, 15 times a day.
Right.
Every single day of the week, your perspective changes. And so I began to write more books like that, and I wrote The Five People You Meet in Heaven, and then my life kind of moved in that direction. But no, that wasn't my aim at all. It was a total accident. I'm the living proof of that John Lennon expression, life is what happens to you when you're busy making plans.
I've always loved that. I love that line. It's so true. It's so true. Mitch, I also want to ask this, because I noticed this as I got older. Although I'm excited when I'm watching sports, I don't care as much because I know there's so many other things that are a hell of a lot more important in my life than that. And I've only noticed that probably within the past 10 years. When you write sports now, you take it on just like, this is sports, this is entertainment, this is fun. There's real stuff in life.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you know, as a sports writer, you have an obligation to treat what you're writing about as important.
Right, that's true.
Who gives a crap?
I mean, it's important. I just mean that. I mean, the outcome, there's more things. There's more.
Right. How I do it is I tend to focus on stories that are not about who won or who lost.
Got it.
But are, you know, sort of a human part or somebody who's struggling with something. But you're absolutely right, and you're not alone. Most guys that I know, it seems to happen somewhere in their late 30s. It starts to wane, you know, that feeling that made you want to get up and paint your face two different colors and go to a football game. It's kind of gone. It doesn't mean you don't like sports.
No, it's not that at all.
You don't care that much who wins or loses because you've lived more of life.
Yeah, and when the game's over, you realize the win or loss, your life is still the same at that point. Like,
the leaves are still stacked up outside, and you got to go get them.
Yeah, you got to do stuff, exactly. Right.
But I'm still familiar with the people who are older than I am, whose identity is all wrapped up.
And believe me, we still like sports.
I just think that's kind of unhealthy.
Yeah, it is. You never did write a sports book, did you?
Yes, I wrote two, actually.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Early in my career.
Okay, all right.
I wrote a book with Bo Schembechler.
Oh, okay.
And called Bo, and I wrote a book called Fab Five about the basketball team.
Oh, jeez. Okay, I should know about that. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. I would have probably continued to write sports books my whole life if not for Tuesdays with Maury. But after that, like you say, then you start thinking about other things in life, and you realize, you know, if you're going to take 2 years of your life to work on a book, do you want it to be about how a guy threw a pass in the end zone, or do you want it to be about how, you know, someone taught a class about what's important in life when they were dying from a debilitating disease?
The next person you meet in heaven, the new book from Mitch Albom, available now. And congratulations again, Mitch. Hopefully you talk soon. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mitch.
All right, thank you, Mitch.
He has evil thoughts. Good. He's just too nice.
Oh, yeah.
You son of a bitch, that guy in front of him. Mitch Albom probably said, you son of a bitch. Hopefully it was a dirtier word than that. I can only say that in the radio. Right. I like him. He's cool.
My words in traffic are generally a bit dirtier than that.
A lot dirtier than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't hold back anymore.
I was going to say, you're lucky your kids are old enough you don't really have to censor yourself anymore.
When it's me and my son, I drop some hardcore lines on people. He's heard them all anyway.
Nothing he doesn't hear from the Fortnite crew.
Exactly. He might hear worse on Fortnite. No, I don't know. I'm pretty bad. I'm pretty filthy in the car.
You'll become zen and peaceful like me in the car.
Is that what you are?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
You find as you get older, you care less and less about...
Tell me more about that, Pops.
Right. Getting somewhere. Really doesn't matter.
Hell. No, I don't drive fast. I don't. I'm not that guy. I just want people to not to hit me while I'm driving.
Well, yeah. I like that, yeah. But I don't have time to yell at people anymore, especially in the car.
I don't want to make that sound. I don't care about sports because I do. But the point is, I just see.
Well, you don't let it ruin the rest of your day.
Thank you. I do not.
Yeah,
I do not.
Well, and the same should apply to things that happen on the road.
It should, Todd.
It does.
It doesn't ruin the rest of my day in the road either. In fact, I forget about it in two seconds afterwards.
But I'm still gonna yell at that asshat who's not using his turn signal.
And I'm still gonna yell at that asshat that doesn't run score a touchdown if I'm rooting for him. But it won't ruin my day.
Yeah, but careful with the horn.
I don't horn it.
Don't honk at people.
I don't. The only time I honk now is if a guy's at the light in front of me and he's looking at his phone too long. I got a honker. He's not paying attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I think that's acceptable.
That's acceptable because the guy would sit through the light.
If he's obviously on his phone.
Well, he's just heads down.
Yeah, you can tell. Then honk.
Yeah, you can tell.
You can tell they're looking down.
But
I don't honk right away. If they're there an extra 2-3 seconds, that means they're not paying attention.
If he's not on his phone, you can. He's probably got a gun in his hand.
Yep, you're right.
And you honk at him, and he's going to shoot you.
Just waiting for some son of a bitch to honk at him.
Everybody's got a gun in their hand. The five people you meet at the red light. That's my new book.
Oh, they're the ones that end up in heaven with you. Because you all got shot.
You all got shot.
Well, only one or two of them has a gun.
Right.
Most of them have a phone in their hand.
Right.
Or just their head up their ass.
Or both.
The five people with their head up their ass. Craig wrote that book.
If only there were five.
Petey left. We're one short.
If only there were five.
Or only
That's
five. Book.
If there's only five people with their head up their ass.
They're celebrating National Cheese Curd Day.
We are.
Yes, we are. Get yourself some cheese curds.
Always
they
like
taste better
cheese.
In Green Bay.
I was watching a football player. I wanted to take a photo yesterday, the other day. It was a college game. His last name was Cheeseman. Spelled like cheese, too.
All right, then.
Yeah, Cheeseman.
So get yourself some
There's a bunch of different cheese days. Oh, it's Cheese Curd Day.
Specifically cheese curds.
Breakfast of Champions.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
We have it sometimes here.
Yeah.
For breakfast.
That's the times that I've been in Green Bay for a game.
And we have it here in the studio, too. We've had them here. But
when it's a noon kickoff, two brats, an order of cheese curds, and a Bloody Mary. That's breakfast.
Man.
That's tailgate and breakfast.
That's tough.
That's some poop coming later, man. Jeez.
No, that kind of binds you up.
Well, maybe the next day.
I just like the fact that nobody tries to wear them as a hat.
Well, you squish them all together, you wait for a while, and then you can wear them for a hat.
Yeah, well, that's
but see, that gets tough later in the season because they're cold.
It's just idiotic.
Right.
That's how you do that. Speaking to the Mirror and promoting his autobiography, thanks a lot, Mr. Kibble White, 74-year-old Roger Daltrey.
Some people
know him from a band called The Who.
I do.
Said that he found that he had three children whose existence he was unaware of.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
Until after his 50th birthday.
You're a rock star. You spread your seed. And he did.
He did.
He liked the groupies, and the ladies loved Roger
Daltrey.
He did.
He didn't go for the drugs, but he did go for the women.
Yep, he did.
He said he had no idea that he had fathered these three kids in the 60s at some point between his divorce and his second marriage.
I told you that quote he had about drugs. He said that, first of all, he was a singer. Not that a lot of singers didn't take drugs, but to keep his voice going. He goes, you try herding three guys on acid across Europe. That's the rest of The Who.
Yeah.
So after 50, he got calls, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. The first he knew of them was when he was sent a picture by one of the girls on his 50th birthday with another couple of women reaching out later.
How old were
in life after seeing him listed as their father on adoption papers? Can you imagine that? Who's your dad? I don't know. Let's say here on the old adoption papers we're digging up. Roger Daltrey.
That would be cool, though.
Huh. I've heard of that name before.
Especially.
Wonder if it's the same guy.
Yeah, it was. You know, it's funny because they do these stories. Roger Daltrey married his wife in like the early mid-70s or something like that. And they do these stories where a reviewer, not forgetting about the fact that people do cheat and still mess around but stay married, especially rock stars. So Dan Rather asked him, you've been married a long time. How'd you keep that going? And Roger Daltrey basically said, well, you know, I wasn't Prince. I mean, it's a stupid question to ask. They asked John Bon Jovi that. Are you married your high school sweetheart? Yeah, I did, but I screwed around a lot.
That's what Steven Tyler said
exactly,
as well.
Right.
They asked him, how do you deal with being in a committed relationship?
And Steven Tyler had two or three different committed relationships.
But answer was specifically, you cheat.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a two-word answer.
But the interviewer always acts like these guys are normal people. Like they get married at 22 as rock stars and stay faithful for 30 years. No, Roger Daltrey apparently did.
I was foolish enough to ask Rick Springfield that question.
Yes, you were.
Yeah. And he was not candid. He just said, I don't know how to answer that. When he could have said, well, I cheated a lot.
You cheat a lot.
Right. You can see how he doesn't want to answer
and
that.
Roger Daltrey probably she cheated a lot.
Because you don't want to, you know, you don't want to hurt the lovely missus.
Right. She knows you
because
cheated.
Because you have you have a very strong relationship with her.
Oh, yeah, it's a relationship.
I think.
You're cheating on the road.
He wasn't with the same woman. I think they were long split up.
Yeah, I think they were.
When I asked him about it.
Yeah. So that's different.
He could have been a little more forthcoming.
Well, and you said this one, Craig, was between his divorce and his second marriage.
Right.
This says he was divorced in 68. He didn't get married again until 71. So he had three years in there
to run wild. I love Dan Rather, but don't be so naive when you ask rock stars, how do you keep your marriage together? Well, I make a lot of money. I'm on the road. I cheat. She accepts it. We move on. Nobody's going to say that, but that's exactly what happens.
Right. Yeah. We argue, is this worth leaving me over? And she decides...
I'm frickin' Roger Daltrey here.
I don't know what she decides.
How old were these kids when he was 15 found out?
Well, he would have... How old would they have been?
Well, they would have been born between 68 and 71.
Oh, he says it was those times?
Yeah.
Yeah, he said it was between his first and second marriage.
That means he just didn't wear rubber.
Right.
For 2 years, and then he started wearing a rubber in 71.
Right. Obviously not.
Yeah. He also said he was kicked out of the band briefly in 1965 after flushing Keith Moon's, quote, great big bag full of pills down the turlet. He said rock and roll had become all about taking as many drugs as possible until you died, and I was spoiling that.
They were speeders, man.
He said from their point of view, it was an intrusion on how they wanted to live their lives.
So when did these kids approach him? Does he say exactly when?
Well, on his 50th birthday, one of them sent him a picture, and then two other reached out later in life after seeing him listed on their original birth certificates as his as the birth father. They were adopted.
And he's how old now?
He's 74. So this would have been somewhere in the mid-90s.
24 years ago then.
Yeah, mid-90s.
God, I hope that doesn't happen to me.
It did, Todd. You forgot, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
It did.
You're right.
You did. You have a kid.
It did.
You have a kid somewhere that doesn't talk to you.
Come to think of it, didn't that happen? Then and around my...
Somewhere in that area. Yeah. Somewhere around a birthday. Yep.
Later 40s.
Yep.
And Keith Moon died from an overdose of heminevrin. Are you familiar with that?
I am not familiar.
That's all I wanted to say.
That's intended to help people battling with alcohol addiction.
Yeah.
He OD'd on that.
Yeah. He didn't look good at the end. He's pretty
young.
Isn't
it ironic?
Yeah, don't you think?
You're listening to the Todd and Tyler Radio Empire.